easy. Just, you know, give us the three steps to solve that problem.
She wrote me this Facebook message, and all it said was, "Zach, what is the meaning of life?" And the problem is that we can be really good at stuff, but hate it. Like, we can be good at things, but it drains the life out of us.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to another episode of Shaken Not Stirred with your host, Heather B. That would be me. Today, I'm being joined by my guest host, Zach Mercurio. Welcome, Zach. I'm super excited to be talking to you today.
Yeah. Hey, Heather. Good to be connected again.
Woo-woo. So Zach is one of the leading experts on the role of purpose and meaning in organization, work, and life. He's an international speaker and the author of the book, The Invisible Leader, Transform Your Life, Work, and Organizations with the Power of Authentic Purpose, which I love, by the way, but we'll get into that.
That's good.
This book has been highly acclaimed by folks such as Arianna Huffington of the Huffington Post, which is huge, by the way, so congratulations on that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's awesome.
But I am thrilled to speak with you today. I read The Invisible Leader, and I've recommended it to at least a dozen people that I know, literally, and many of them have bought it.
That's awesome. Well, thank you.
I found it to be transformative, validating, and inspirational just in the ways that I want to move forward in my life differently and honestly in ways that I have since reading the book. And it's almost been like a paradigm shift for me, to be honest, which has been kind of cool. And again, just very transformative. And so, I would just love to talk to you about, you know, the book and how this came about. And as someone that has just written, I recently wrote a chapter in someone else's book, and that was a lot of work. So having a whole entire book, I'm just like, how, what, where, when, what? But I would love to just start by asking you, like, you know, why did you write a book about purpose, and why do you think there's a need for purpose in today's world?
Well, you know, everything else, it's kind of funny. Everything else in nature dies when it no longer serves a purpose. And it's taken human beings to figure that out a long time, that the same is true with us, you know. And when we don't have a sense of usefulness or contribution or significance or know what that use is, we tend to, in a sense, die inside. I think it's why you see, like, just 13% of the world's population says they are engaged or enthusiastic in their work. Clinical anxiety and depression amongst college students stemming from, like, existential confusion is up. You know, people just are generally, there's a lot of dissatisfaction right now in the way people spend the majority of their lives. And a lot of that research finds is related to this need for knowing what your contribution is and what your usefulness is and your purpose as a person. And for me, it started because I hated my first job out of college.
Really?
I was an advertising account executive for a radio station. So I literally sold air. Now, it's not the job that was the problem. It was the lack of purpose in that job, in the sense of that all anybody talked about was making money. You know, how do we get the most money out of the clients? It wasn't about the clients, the people. And, you know, they lived for results. And I've always said and found that when you live for results, you often die by results. And that team was just sort of like, you know, miserable. And I made it a point after that experience to make sure nobody ended up like me again. And that's why I researched the role of purpose and meaning beyond what you do or what you get for what you do, and its power to compel us as people.
Yeah. No, I can appreciate that. It makes me think a lot of, like, as I was reading it and even hearing what you said right now, it makes me think of values and, like, what I think we're taught to value, and which may be the same or differ from internally what we value. Just the idea of, you know, results, results, results. I think we're in a very results-driven society. And so I can see how that can skew us away from this idea of a larger purpose, because it's not always about, and you said this in your book, it's not always about why we do something, but what we're doing, you know?
Yeah.
Which I just find to be, that's what made me take a step back when I read this and was like, you know, like, I've been thinking about things. And I don't want to say wrong per se, because I don't think there's so much a right and wrong, but just going back to that idea of the paradigm shift, like that's what it was for me. You know, I've been so ingrained and conditioned around what I was doing. And that became a large part, I think, of my identity in a lot of ways, you know, like, so my work was not always just about what I enjoyed doing. But it was like, you know, my personal identity was just like in that what, you know? And so I love just hearing about your idea of purpose, because I think that's so important.
And you're not alone. I mean, we are taught to acquire and achieve things to achieve success and happiness. You know, almost everything that we do, all of like our major systems say that if you do this, then you'll get this. Like in schools, if you get this grade, then you'll be smart. If you get this degree, then you'll be worth something. If you get this job, then you'll be happy. If you get this family and this house and this quote unquote American dream, then you'll be happy. And I always say the problem with results in living that way is precisely the fact that you can achieve them. So you achieve the results, you get the job, you get the degree, you get all of that stuff. And then what? Well, you have to make another one. And then what? And it's sort of this never ending pushing ourselves to a place we don't even know where we're going. And, you know, purpose is what fills that then what question. And it's something that we can strive for versus just constantly being driven by these results and things to achieve.
Right. Well, I would love to hear from you, like, how has doing this research and writing this book, like, impacted your life and sense of purpose? Like you mentioned early on, your first job out of school and maybe not finding satisfaction maybe in different ways, you know, around that. But I'm just curious of how, after all of this, I call it me-search when I'm doing research. Yeah. Because so much like comes to the surface, at least for me. So I'd love to, you know, just hear like how it's impacted you after, you know, doing this amazing book.
You know, I wrote the book to myself too, because oftentimes in this purpose work, like people think that like I wake up and I'm just like, wow, I'm on a planet. This is awesome. And like happy all the time about purpose. But we have been conditioned, like you said, there are so many external forces that want us to default into someone else's plan for our lives. There are so many forces that try to keep us locked into that place that even in my work, I have to guard against that. And so building the habits, purpose is, you know, for me, purpose is not something you can find or go get. It's a mindset. It's a lifestyle. It's the ability to think about where you are right now differently. I always say, if you can't discover purpose where you are, you'll never be able to discover it where you want to go. And there are ways we can uncover it. And for me, when I look back at that guy in that job out of college, if I knew what I knew now, I probably could have made a difference in that job. Like I probably could have crafted that work as purposeful. If I really believed that we sold advertising to help these people who were putting all of their money into these new restaurants and these small businesses because it was their dream, if we focused on that, it could have been fulfilling. But there was just I didn't have the tools that I've learned over the past 10, 15 years to understand how to craft that work as purposeful. I get to work with like people who in society, they have been relegated as like lesser than. I work with stigmatized workers. So a lot of my research is with janitors, mechanics, bus drivers. People don't have the luxury, you know, like I do to be able to go on to LinkedIn and say, what job do I want next? Like that's a privilege. There's a lot of people that don't have that privilege and probably a lot of listeners that you have that can't just go and quit their job. And it's so important to recognize that purpose isn't a job. It's being able to find the meaning of what you're doing right now. And just one story to kind of kick this off for listeners to think about this differently is I was working with a janitor, and this is in The Invisible Leader. And I had gone in and to interview her, and her name was Mary, and she worked as a janitor in a residence hall at a university for 30 years, worked herself up to a supervisor, ended up being able to retire. And she came back as a janitor level one again after she had worked herself way up to retire. And I asked her, being a good researcher, I said, why? And she said, I couldn't stand the thought of those students in the residence halls not having a parent figure away from home. she was able to think about the human being and the meaning of her work. Cleaning was what she did. Being a parent figure was why she did it. And I've learned so much from ordinary people who have an extraordinary perspective. And that's what I root this purpose work on. It's not something you can find. It's a mindset. It's a lifestyle. And through that, you can craft your life's purpose.
Yeah, I love the idea of finding meaning, right? Because like you said, it's not as easy as, well, if you don't like your job, just quit. Or, you know, if you, you know, want a career change, just go back to school. Like life doesn't always work that way. And I'd love to hear if you have ideas on how does someone potentially start about finding meaning maybe in spaces that they're not currently finding it, right? Like, how do we even begin that process of making meaning? You know, easy. Just, you know, give us the three steps.
The meaning of life right now in like 5 seconds. Well, you know, actually, funny enough, I got a message from a former student, you know, that I taught at the university. And she wrote me this Facebook message and all it said was, Zach, what is the meaning of life? Now, some of my students like joke with me like that because they know I'm like the purpose and meaning guy or whatever.
Yeah.
But I've really been obsessing about it because I think that it's a really destructive question to ask. What is the meaning of life or what is the meaning of work? Because meaning, in a sense, we have to understand what meaning is, right? Before I talk about how we can do it, is meaning is like the significance you, a human, ascribes to something. So you may have like a souvenir from a trip that you ascribe significance to because it brings back memories. Or you may have an object, a memento that means something to you because it reminds you of somebody else and it makes you feel good. And so we have to understand that meaning is something that's created by human beings that ascribe significance to something. So when somebody asks, or when you ask, what's the meaning of my life? You have to say that meaning is held in the lives of other people. So I think that's the wrong question. I think we should be asking, what are the meanings of my life? Like over your whole life, like you will meet between 80 and 90,000 people. There are 80 to 90,000 meanings of your life because it's the other people on this planet that can ascribe significance and the meaning of your life to them. So that is one of the first things that I think people who are listening, who are in any circumstance, need to understand is that if you are alive and if you are around other people, then you have profound meanings for other people. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things is not trying to find meaning out there yet, but trying to uncover those meanings where you are right now. So asking questions like at the beginning of a day, what am I going to do today that could potentially impact another human being? Asking yourself the question of, instead of like, what should I do with my life? Asking a question of, what should my life do for other people? Because ultimately, the meaning of our life is held by the hundreds of thousands of people we will interact with. And the meaning of our life, I think, is the average of what those interactions mean to others. And so starting where you are and thinking about what's your contribution, like what's your usefulness? What are you good at helping with? What energizes you? How do you affect others around you in your family, in your school, with your friends, in your classroom? That's the best place to start.
No, I appreciate that. And I know I keep using the word paradigm shift, but that's what it is, right? I can't ever remember a time for myself, to be honest, when someone either taught me or even asked me the question of, you know, like, why do you do what you do, right? It's always, well, what do you do? How long have you done it? You know, like, what's next? What's after that?
What are you going to do after this?
Yeah, exactly. But never can I remember many times, if any, of, well, why do you do it? Like, why is it meaningful to you? Or even honestly asking myself, having to pause and sometimes ask myself those questions and not knowing, recognizing that something wasn't quite right in different situations, whether it was work or, you know, friendships, relationships, what have you. Because I think, though I know your book is around work and organizations and life, but I really think it can, the way you talk about these things transcends into so many other areas of life outside of, you know, work and whatnot. And so, you know, I even think about, you know, why am I still, you know, holding on to this tainted friendship, you know, or
why
am I still holding on to, you know, X, Y, and Z? And it really had me thinking about how I don't often pause and reflect. And I think when we take those moments to pause and reflect and ask those types of questions that you pose, I think it is helpful to get to that larger understanding of your own purpose, right? And something I was thinking about, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because I don't think there's ever a time where you're like, purpose, check, I got it. Like, I figured out what I'm doing, you know, forever. Like, I've reached that optimal, I guess it's like the student question, you know, what's the meaning of life? Oh, I have figured it out.
Yeah.
And now I'm done and I can.
If you've arrived, you're probably further away than when you started.
Right,
you
think exactly, you've arrived. Right? Yeah. But I think those questions are something that I hope for myself to continue asking myself, especially at certain periods of time, you know, just almost like check back in, right? Yeah. Of like, okay, like, is this meaningful to me? It is, yes or no? If it is, great. What is it about it? If it's not, okay, well, what's happening now? Like, how do I come back to that space that for me is grounding when I'm asking myself those questions and I'm able to answer it? That's what I think about. And there's so many, one thing I really love about your book also is that at each chapter, there's those prompt like questions, or there's those exercises to help put together the information you're giving, as well as like how to put it into action. And that's something that I really appreciate. And I've done all of those things.
Nice, good.
And it's caused me to make some very big changes in my life, which I'm appreciative of. And I think some people look at that and they're just like, I can't believe, you know, you did that. I'm like, yeah, but I really don't think I was reaching, I was no longer operating from my purpose. You know, I wasn't operating from my why. I was operating from like a what, and that wasn't good, you know?
Yeah, and most of what we do, like, if you just look at how we've all been educated, and myself, is that we tend to follow other people's plans for our lives. Like I had worked in a university for a long time, and I had this realization one moment that all of these students, like, you know, before their feet hit the pavement, we tell them what to do and how to do it best, but we never ask them why they are. And then also what we tend to do is we tend to bribe them by following other people's plans for their lives, like course catalogs and majors and careers. So many people tell us who to be that we have to cut through that. And it's hard. Like this purpose stuff is not easy. It's not like butterflies and, you know, TED Talks and things like that. Like, it's really difficult. It's, you know, and I always say this is that purpose is crafted. It's not found. And any craft takes a lot of time, a lot of reflection, a lot of hard work. And I think that what you're doing and what you're talking about is right on. I mean, purpose is crafted through taking action, through trying things, reflecting. If it doesn't work, trying another, something else, reflecting on it. If it doesn't feel meaningful to you, trying something else, reflecting, that constant iteration of crafting your life and your understanding of what your contribution and usefulness is to the world. And so I think you raise a great point that it's not about finding something. It's not about a magical aha moment. Like, purpose isn't in some middle of a stock photo meadow with a millennial running through with glitter and sparklers. Like, it's just not. It's within you. It's where you are right now, and it's a way of being, and it's crafted over time.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion.
No, I completely agree. And something, an image that came into my head when you were talking about, you know, the imagery of, you know, running through a meadow with, you know, sunshine and clouds. And I can remember this one time it was having a bit of a struggle moment, if you will, in life. And I was walking through, like, it was either like a Ross or Marshalls, and I was in the picture frame aisle where, you know, the stock photo is all these happy, smiling, joyful, right? And in a lot of ways, the metaphor of that, of like, you're buying this like picture frame to capture a moment in life. And even the stock photo, it shows in a lot of ways of how life is supposed to be, right? There was no one crying or, you know, sad or, you know, everyone is just having, you know, the time of your life. And then when you are, or I'll use I statements, when I find myself not having those moments, I often think there's something going on. There's something wrong with me, right? Like I must be doing something wrong, or I'm not meeting that I'm not finding meaning, you know, in something, or someone told me this should be meaningful. And so why can't I make it meaningful to myself? Yeah, right. Yeah. And that's just not how it works.
Well, look at what we're in, like, it's January. I mean, it was like the self-help industry second Christmas of New Year's resolutions, right? Everything on your newsfeed is do these 10 things, do this, don't do this, do that. I mean, we're almost being told that we're not good enough all the time, all day long, you know, through everything that we look at. It's basically advertising that you're not good enough, I can help with that. That what purpose does, and it's a paradigm shift, is it says that you are good enough. You have meaning right now. There is purpose in your life. It's not something you can go find. You have to look within. You have to reflect. You have to do the personal work yourself. And it takes a lot of time. One of the funny things about New Year's resolutions is that, like, almost, I think it's almost 50% of them will be falling by the wayside in 6 months. And one of the problems is that the missing ingredient is purpose. People do it just for themselves. Like, I'm just going to, like, you know, exercise more to make me feel good, but they don't ask why. They don't ask why they're actually doing it and dig into that. Like, 'cause if you think, like, for me, I was like, I want to travel more. But when I dug down into, like, five whys into why I wanted to do that, it really came down to that I was just unhappy with a certain aspect of my life that I needed to find meaning in and rebuild, not that I needed to go travel. So those asking why is so powerful to cut through our what obsessed world and society.
Yeah. So what would your advice be to listeners outside of reading your book, right? That's my advice to y'all. Read the book. But how can those that are listening initiate a change towards a more purpose-driven life? And I know you've talked about some of that already in you know, the why questions and how to shift your thought around meaning. But do you have any additional thoughts around how folks can start initiating that change?
Yeah, I mean, I talked about that first key shift, that you're not going to go find purpose somewhere out there, is a first big mindset shift to undertaking any of this work. And then understanding that there is profound meaning where you are right now. But there are really specific ways that you can uncover purpose just in the current moment. Like, for example, you know, one of the ways is just try changing the perceptions of what you're doing, even like really mundane tasks. Like, sometimes I have people pick, especially at work or whatever they're doing, pick the task you hate the most in your day and ask yourself, what would happen to another human being if I didn't do it? What would happen to the organization if I didn't do it? I was working with some bus drivers at a local school district around purpose and meaning. And this one guy, after I asked that question, said, well, after hearing you, I still hate sweeping the bus. Like, I wasn't born to sweep the bus. And then I asked him, what would happen if you didn't? And he started thinking, well, someone else would have to. And I said, well, how would they feel? And he said, well, probably overwhelmed. And I said, do you like making people feel overwhelmed in your personal life? Like, as a person, is that who you want to be? And he said, no. And I was like, well, why do we do that in work? Like, why don't we see those two or three steps beyond just the thing that we hate doing and think about how it impacts another person? So that would be one thing, changing your perceptions. The other thing is doing some self-exploration around what energizes you. So here's the thing. We have been taught to be good at stuff. And the problem is that we can be really good at stuff, but hate it. Like, we can be good at things, but it drains the life out of us. Like in, in our workplaces and everywhere, people are like, oh, you're good at that. You should keep doing that. Or you're good at that, Heather. You should go into this career. You're good at that. But we can be good at things and hate it. Like I'm good at managing details, but I get drained by it. So one of the things you can, do is really think about when you felt most alive and when you felt most pride in something that you were doing. And why were those things, why was that energizing for you? Like, what were you doing? What were the things? Were you connecting with someone? Were you helping somebody? Were you writing? What are those things you were doing? And those typically are your energizers. And there's a difference between energizers and talent. And we conflate talent with strengths. But energizers are what's intrinsic to you, what motivates you from the inside. So those are two ways to start thinking about it, thinking about the human being at the end of anything that you do, even the things that you hate most, especially. And two, to really think about what makes you come alive. And can you do more of those things throughout your day in your current situation? And then as you do those things, you start crafting a better understanding of who you are and more importantly, why you are.
Yeah. I love that, that idea of like what makes you come alive.
Yes.
That's for me, that's so powerful. Because I don't think that one, I don't believe we're definitely socialized around that. And then two, when I think about a work world, I'll say, of people that are doing things around what makes them feel alive and how different that can look. And the imagery that I get in my head when I think about that, I'm just like, it's kind of mind blowing for me. And it's just like, wow. You know, like I remember this conversation I had with an old coworker of mine. We were talking about, this was, you know, some months ago. So this was well before I read the book, but the book validated that specific moment. We were talking about, I think I had asked her, like, what is it that you like to do? Like, what are you hoping, you know, to do? And I think right away she went towards career trajectory, right? Of like, well, I'm going to do what I'm doing now. And then I'm going to, you know, step up and do that. And I remember asking her, because this was a good friend of mine. I was like, but what is it that you like to do, you know, like it, just in general? And then what we ended up talking about had nothing to do with her current job. And now that's not to say that she doesn't like her job or, you know, her job doesn't have meaning to her, but the conversation shifted so much when it became around that idea of like, well, what makes you feel alive? And there was all sorts of, you know, ideas that started being generated from that conversation. And I remember at the end of it was almost this, I'll call it an aha moment of, she was like, I think I need to start doing some things differently because I'm not reaching that meaning that I find when I'm doing this other stuff we were talking about that had nothing to do with like her current job, if you will, you know?
Yeah. I'm so glad you're there to ask her those questions. You imagine how many people don't get asked those questions.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I think your book is so freaking important.
Yeah. Like that's why we have the phenomenon of midlife crisis. I believe, for example, when people are 45 and they all of a sudden realize that they haven't been doing this is not that they're not smart or in tune with themselves, but it's because they just haven't been asked these questions or haven't thought about these questions in a deeper way. And then they try to find meaning, usually in objects, usually in material things, or hobbies. You know, we try to label ourselves by the things we do because we don't have a sense of why we are.
It makes me think about this quote out of the book. When we believe we matter and that our work matters and we bring this reality into our daily lives and organization, we start to realize we have purpose. And I feel like that just sums up so much of what, you know, we've talked about in this episode, but it just sums up so much because I think mattering matters. I don't know how else to say that, you know, but how important it is when someone feels like not only that they matter, but that something they do matters. You know, going back to the example you used of the bus driver and you know, initially it sounded like he was just like, I just sweep. And it's like, yeah, but you know, you asking the question of, well, what would it look like if you weren't sweeping? Like it matters.
It matters. Like, yeah, we can't, you know, I don't like double negatives, but I'll use one. I mean, like we can't not matter. I mean, we are like every day we're impacting people, human beings. I was the same school district I was about to go in and do a talk about meaning and mattering with mechanics and the bus drivers. And the supervisors told me, oh, they're going to be a tough crowd. Like, they're not going to be into this meaning stuff or purpose stuff. You know, they're just trying to get a paycheck. And I went in and I just had them write down, when is the time where you felt like your work mattered to the world most? And they all did it. They all sent it back. And one of the first ones I read was from this bus driver. And they wrote, I felt like my job mattered when I was at the funeral of a 4-year-old pre-K student who had passed away of a terminal illness. And the dad came to me, saw that I was wearing the Boulder Valley School District Transportation Services shirt, and said to me, I just want to let you know that the bus ride to school was the highlight of my kid's life. And I read 75 compelling stories like that of people, quote unquote, that would be a tough crowd who didn't want mattering and meaning. And I think that what happens is these stories of mattering and meaning in our lives, because we're always taught to look to something else in the future to get meaning and mattering, I think that what happens is we overlook the tremendous and we lock up these stories of meaning we have right now. And what I found is that this search for purpose spares no one. I mean, I have a toddler right now and all he asks me is why. We're wired to ask why since we learn language to make sense of the world. And so all of this stuff, all of this mattering has been, is already within us in this yearning and craving for mattering. And as you know, I'm sure knowing your background and the work that you've done, is that there is potentially nothing more powerful than when someone feels significant and valued and like they belong. Mm-hmm. And that's how a sense of purpose can operate with people, is it can help them feel like they belong and they're useful and they can contribute.
Yeah, because the minute I can think of moments in my life where I didn't feel like I mattered, didn't feel valued, the way that I was operating in those moments was so far from purpose and so far from meaning and so far from even, you know, my core, because it just, at that point for me, it just felt like it was going through motions, right? Because, you know, it was like, what does any of this matter anyway? Like no one cares about what I'm doing. So I didn't feel like I was contributing to anything because of what I was, the messages I was receiving around not being valued and how much that can impact how someone shows up in their work or, you know, in a relationship or in, you know, all sorts. I think there's different scenarios of how important, you know, as you're saying that is.
Yeah. So let me bring up an important point for your listeners is that people, there are some screwed up systems and organizations that stifle meaning and mattering. You know, and so there's two sides to this. You know, we've been talking about the personal crafting of meaningful work. I also work with organizational leaders who have sucked the meaning and purpose out of the environments without even knowing it. And so there's two things going on here. There are systems in place that want us to feel like we don't matter. They want us to be just cogs in the machine, just pieces that we don't see the whole. And that actually makes us worse in terms of how we're employees and fulfillment and satisfaction and happiness and well-being and all these work outcomes. So I will say that, and I want to say that there are some systems like maybe that you experienced that hinder the experience of meaning and meaningfulness, which almost makes it even more important to get back and see how you can craft it for yourself. Because right. Then you'll know how to craft those environments for others when everybody here is going to be right. In a leadership position someday.
Yeah. 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 The last quote I'll bring up just because I think, well, maybe the last one, but it attached to me is the, we all want to contribute to something bigger than ourselves. And, you know, what you mentioned around, you know, you might find yourself in these organizations or in situations where someone either is intentionally or not intentionally, like they're not looking to do it for you, right? And so how do you, this is more rhetorical, you don't necessarily have to answer it, but you know, how do you then go about to create this message, if you will, to yourself of like you are contributing to something bigger than yourself? Because I think that when I find myself operating from that space of knowing like what I'm doing is larger than me, that adds so much more meaning and purpose to my life than just doing it, as you said earlier, like I'm not just doing it for myself, you know, and how do I attach it to something bigger? And that makes me feel like I'm just contributing to life. I have a purpose, like, and this is what it is because I'm doing something beyond me. So I really appreciated that quote.
Yeah. And it's all of this stuff is like, you know, stimulating, right? But again, like you said, it takes some work. I mean, there are things that you have to do, and it's difficult, and it takes a lot of time to learn how to have a purposeful mindset. One of my favorite books is called Man's Search for Meaning, and it's by Viktor Frankl, and he was a concentration camp prisoner, and at the same time, he is a psychiatrist. And what he found was that in those deplorable, pretty much the most hellish conditions you could imagine a human being in, is he was able to find a meaning and purpose in that experience that existed outside the camp itself, which was trying to be reunited with his wife again, that he fixated on so strongly that as he was being walked out into the cold with no shoes on, doing manual labor, near death, he found energy in thinking about that bigger meaning and purpose. And then he studied why these prisoners survived. And he found that it was because they had a purpose that was bigger and outside of themselves. And so anytime someone tells me, you know, they're in a situation that's hopeless, I tell them to read this book, because he went on to do be a psychiatrist that pioneered this new way of psychiatry around helping people to find meaning and purpose before treating a disease. Because ultimately that finding meaning outside of yourself is the engine of healing and of orienting our lives. And so I'd recommend the listeners that book, because especially if you're in a really difficult situation, you don't know how you could possibly find meaning of it. You've almost thought about turning this podcast off because it's frustrating, because you're like, I can't do this. My boss is this. My family situation is like this. I encourage you to pick that up and think about that. Think about how you can craft and find the meaning that's outside of the situation and attach your mind to that.
Yeah. Are there any lasting thoughts that you would like to give overall on whether it's the book or just the idea of what the book is about, or anything listeners can kind of take away besides this entire episode?
No, this was awesome. I mean, it was great talking with you. You brought up some great stuff that have been fun to explore and think about, and I'm going to be thinking about it a lot more. I think that for me, really what I find people often say is they often try to look for the next best thing. We always try to look for the next thing. And I get really worried about that because I have kids now. And so I think of my kids' teachers or supervisors in the future, like if they're going to work looking for the next thing, if the people who are in our hospitals are looking for the next thing, if the people who are lawyers are looking for the next thing, if our janitors are looking for the next thing to keep our place clean, our society clean. And so what I would warn against is that if you're in a situation that's difficult, try to first resist the urge to just say, I want to get out of here and I want to be somewhere else in my mind. Because what happens is you become mindless to the present moment. And when you become mindless to the present moment, you also become mindless to your own meaning and purpose that you already have and your contribution in the present moment. And that results in a whole host of things like, unfulfillment, frustration, burnout. And so that's what I would advocate for, is to look where you are right now to find meaning. And if you can learn to do that through some of the things we've talked about in this episode, then you'll be better able to identify where you want to be and what your contribution is. But it starts right now. And I do want to say that I believe that everybody deeply matters in the world. And we deeply matter. I don't care what you've been told. You scientifically matter. You can't not matter. And so that's the whole point of purpose, is to help people find significance in mattering, to feel better and do better at whatever they're doing.
Yeah. I love those words. So again, The Invisible Leader, you can find it on Amazon. Are there other spaces that folks can?
Yeah, yeah. So if you go to zachmercurio.com and then go to the book link, there's all the retailers that it's available on. So you can pick your favorite retailer, get it there. And then, yeah, and I also have a monthly newsletter that I talk about all this stuff in, just what I've been reading for the month. And then I also give a free exercise that you can just try. So you can go to purposespeaks.com and sign up for the monthly mailing list. I won't spam you. It's just purely just once a month and some different tips to discover purpose.
I will make sure to sign up for that. And all this information will also be in the link in the podcast so you all can find it easy.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. I've really appreciated this conversation. It's brought so much additional thought to even what I've already read. And I mean, I was going through and highlighting and bookmarking.
That's awesome. That makes me happy because you never know when you write a book who's going to read it. So
yeah.
I love that I'm looking and talking to someone who did read it.
Yes, I did. Yeah. All right. So my favorite part of the episode, shit I ain't got time for. Let me think this time around. What don't I have time for? You know, I've really been thinking more about that whole idea of misery loves company. And I truly believe that, like, so many times people are just miserable. They want you to be miserable with them. I'm like, I don't have time for that. I like to be in harmonious environments. I try to be uplifting. We all have, you know, crappy times in our life, and I'm not trying to stay there. So if you're trying to stay there, you stay over there, and I'll stay over here. But please, don't try to pull me into your miserable company. I ain't got time for it.
Yeah.
I gotta go. Yeah.
You know, I don't have time for complaining. People who complain all the time.
Oh.
Either.
Cosine.
There's Cosine. Too much. There's too much I can already complain about in my own life. And so when people just come to you and are complaining all the time about things, it's a drag. And so if you're out there, try not complaining for a day. See what happens. Yeah. I actually tried it a couple days ago, not complaining. And you'll realize how often you complain. My grandfather wrote me a card. He's 95 years old and he just wrote in it. All he wrote was, improve the moment. So ask yourself, do you improve the moment or do you take away from the moment? I don't got time for complaining.
I love it. And on that note, we're out.
Thanks for listening to Shaken Not Stirred, a part of the Overthink Podcast Network. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the podcast network. And if you're really feeling generous, go ahead and rate and review us on iTunes. That'd help us out in a big way and would help us create more content to share with you as well. So as always, you can check out our website at overthinkpod.com. And also our handle is at overthinkpod pretty much everywhere else. So give us a follow on Twitter and Instagram and like us on Facebook. And that'd help us out too. Spread the word. We're always interested in hearing from listeners. So please drop us a line and let us know what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, maybe even if you want to suggest some topics you'd like to hear featured on the podcast, our email address is overthinkpod@gmail.com. Thanks again for stopping by. Thank you.